Yes, so a little bit about biography of this object. It has, as I gave, I say, several different names, and maybe even Dark Energy, even in addition to the first thing. It was born almost 90 years ago. Father is known, Albert Einstein, and whose attitude to the newborn baby after a few years was very negative, and he never believed that cosmological constant after that would be non-zero. He considered it as the biggest blunder of his life, and though I put it as an quotation mark, I was not able to find exactly where it was written, though I don't know if anybody knows any publication, but it is quoted in several reviews on Einstein on cosmological constant. So after Hubble discovered that universe indeed expanding, Einstein wanted to forget about notion of cosmological constant. And many times it was considered to be dead, and I believe erroneously, I believe that vacuum life or vacuum energy or something must be non-zero. It seems to be very well alive today, though again, not everybody would agree with this statement. And there are several attempts to avoid conclusion that lambda or dark energy is non-zero, trying to find possible flaws in observational data or some, even without modification of theory. In framework of the standard approach, people try to say that maybe interpretation of the data, accuracy or something else are not so good as it is believed. So still this quantity is not safe now. Too many people want to kill it, and that's a really interesting question. Phenomenological, if it is zero or not. And I would like to two more quotations. For example, Lemaître wrote somewhere again that even if Einstein didn't do anything but simply introduce cosmological term into general relativity, it would be enough to make his name famous. On the other hand, Gamow, who was, I think, creator of Big Bang cosmology, wrote in his autobiography book, My Road Line, that lambda, and he wrote, not capital, but small lambda, so it reminds the snake, raises its nasty head again. It was in the 60s at that time it was believed that cosmological constant may be non-zero because of accumulation of quasars near redshift equal 2. Now it is understood that it was an observational effect and an evolutionary effect, so this piece of data is not considered to be serious. So this is a big spectrum from plus or minus infinity additive to lambda term, and situation, I think, changed maybe 10 years ago, but the whole history was so messy. So what is this lambda term? It is, there is one parameter freedom in a general relativity equation. This famous Einstein tensor. This is curvature tensor and curvature scalar. And at the right-hand side, we have social gravity, energy momentum, tensor of matter. And Einstein introduced a constant term proportional to the metric tensor. And he, by some reason, he believed that the universe must be static, though people already knew that there would be thermal death of universe which existed infinitely long in time, and also there was the problem on this paradox that in static universe, homogeneous uniform, there would be infinitely bright sky, but still Einstein believed that it must be stable, stationary universe, and found a cosmological solution with positive lambda, which could be stationary, but of course it wouldn't be, because lambda creates gravitational repulsion, and it would counterweight gravitational attraction of normal matter. Of course this solution would be unstable, because if we expand a little more, lambda remains constant, density of matter falls down, and lambda will win. Otherwise, other way around, if we compress the universe a little bit, then lambda remains constant, but energy would be bigger, and the universe would fall. So this solution would be sure unstable, but So it was at least some attempt to save stationary numbers. There is another thing which is very important, that number must be constant, and there is a covariant conservation by Stein tensor. It is really a kinematical thing, like conservation of current in electrodynamics. We have very well known Maxwell equation, and since F mu is anti-symmetric tensor, then second derivative of F mu must be identically zero, and if we have massless electrodynamics, then there is no way to avoid the current conservation condition if you want to keep normal electrodynamics. So current is automatically conserved in reasonable electrodynamics. The same thing must be in general relativity, in metric theory. There is also some kinematical conservation of Einstein tensor. It's practically the same as conservation of as vanishing of second derivative of F minimum. Because of that, right-hand side of Einstein equation must vanish, and it means to conservation of energy momentum tensor must be conserved. And it goes automatically because of Noetherian, because if theory is invariant with respect to change of coordinate system, then this invariance leads to conservation law. And in metric theory, again, metric tensor must be covariantly conserved. It's also a kind of kinematic condition. And this is a repetition, but it's a logical constant, because of that must be really constant. So that's the way there are some works in the literature with lambda being a function of time. And I think these works have the right to live, because we have really serious problem, and some one or other attempts to solve it may help. But one has to keep in mind that at least in frameworks of the standard metric theory, the standard, usual general covariance, it is not so innocent assumption. And we have either to forget about that, or some modification of the theory is necessary. Either one has to introduce new fields or to do something else. And I want to know is that first attempt to introduce time-dependent lambda was made by Bronstein, I would say, sounds in Russian, in 35, I think, plus minus 1 year. And I saw his work and also criticism by Landau. Landau was very critical.
Last is impossible if you were in jail.
In 35, he was not in jail. No, Landau was in prison in 39. But as for Bronstein, he was in fact arrested in 37, I believe, and he died in either was killed by firing squad or died in prison. And in fact, many people from Physical Technical Institute in St. Petersburg disappeared. And for example, probably nobody here knows who discovered liquid crystals. And the guy who discovered it, his name was Frederiksen. He was a young experimentalist working in this institute. He survived and was released in 55, I guess. And after that, he spent his maybe 10 years as a professor of Leningrad University. But he didn't work. So I think he deserves Nobel Prize, because at least what we use, this screen doesn't work, but it uses liquid crystals and use. Okay, so now coming back to the problem of vacuum energy, and I think the modern point of view is very much different from Einstein's assumption. Namely, we have to put this quantity from the left-hand side of the equation to the right-hand side. It's a trivial mathematical procedure, but from the point of view of physics, it's not so trivial, and we call it vacuum energy, and this is should be substituted in the right-hand side of the equation. And now a little bit about normalization or how this quantity is measured. It is measured in terms of dimensionless parameter omega. It's very well known cosmological parameter, ratio of a certain form of energy density with respect to so-called critical energy density or closed energy density. This is energy density which corresponds to exactly a flat universe, critical. In that critical energy density is something like 10 to minus 29 grams per cubic centimeters, or in units natural particle physics, it's 10 to the power minus 47 gigaelectron volts to the fourth power. So it goes without saying, but maybe I should say it explicitly, that I'm using system of units with speed of light equal 1, h, Planck constant equal 1, and even Boltzmann constant coming to you. Okay, so now continuing history, that initially a cosmological constant was assumed to be order of unity, well, I mean, only to be order of unity. After Hubble's discovery, majority believed that omega should be identically zero. Still, many people, Demeter, De Sitter, Eddington, considered this to be must be non-zero, and one of the most important discoveries in general relativity. And for many years, nobody, well, 99% maybe, I don't know, 90% of people, especially astronomers, believed that it must be zero. Some change of point of view was in the 60s, as I said, because of discovery of quasars near redshift 2. And from 60s to practically to the end of the previous millennium, it was mostly assumed to be identically zero, except maybe for very few people. One of the people who created the who considered the problem really serious, very serious, was Zidonich, and he wrote a paper in 1968. In Soviet Physics of Techy, where he discussed quantum contributions to vacuum energy and stressed that this problem is really very important. And at the end of the 90s, there was accumulated pieces of data which all indicated, or really, not really proved, but very strong indication in favor of zero vacuum energy. First of all, it was universe age crisis. If with measured value of Hubble parameter, which was about 70 kilometers per second per megaparsec, universe was too young, and age of order of 10 billion years. While there was some measurement, so-called measurement of the universe age using nuclear chronology and also theory of stellar evolution, both methods indicated that the universe should be older than 13 billion years, maybe even 15 billion years, something like that. It was one thing, and of course, accuracy was very low, and this is not the most serious argument in favor of zero lambda, but central values were very much in favor of old universe. Second thing was the measurement of total matter density in the universe, and there again were several ways of measuring it. First of all, mass-to-light ratio in galaxies or in galactic clusters, which gives omega of order of 0.3. And another thing in the same along the same lines, measurement of the ratio of mass of baryonic matter to mass of total matter in each galactic cluster, it shows the same thing. And so another thing was gravitational lensing and quite interesting distribution of galactic clusters as a function of redshift. And if for flat universe and for omega equal 0.3, there is a very big difference, factor 5 difference of, between number of rich galactic clusters. So all this data, all the selection in a sense is free from systematic errors because these data are extremely, well, not extremely, but simply not connected. They are all independent. All indicated that density of matter is 0.3 in the universe, so our universe, if there is nothing else, should be over. On the other hand, you can believe inflation or not, maybe very dispersed point of view, inflation strongly predicts that omega must be equal to 1 with accuracy at the level of 10 to minus 4. And I believe that inflation is now an experimental fact. I hope, well, there are many people who would not agree with that, but I think there is no other way to prove that to make the universe as it is now without inflation. But of course, it's very dangerous to formulate any no-more theorem in physics. For example, there was a famous theorem that one cannot combine internal and external symmetries. And then it was found that if one slightly changed the rules of the game, introducing anti-commutator together with commutators, then it is impossible and we know that it's supersymmetry from supersymmetry theorem. So, maybe there are some other ways to create universe without inflation, but I don't know. But what is important, there is observational data, namely position of the first Doppler, not Doppler, acoustic peak, it's not Doppler peak, acoustic peak in distribution of irregular intensity of cosmic microwave background radiation, and in framework of under standard assumption, and omega should be very close to 1. So if you know that matter gives 0.3 contribution to omega, then we have to explain the missing photon of 0.7. And there was, in a sense, direct measurement that far away supernova goes away from us with acceleration. And this was, of course, people, what they see that supernova are not as bright as they are expected to be. Of course, it is based on the assumption that supernova are standard candles and some other astronomical assumptions, but taken under this assumption, this fact indicates that supernova are indeed not as bright as expected. So it may, one possible explanation is expansion with acceleration. There was another possibility that there is so-called gray dust, so that light is absorbed in the way from supernova to us, and that's why they are not so bright. But there was, there are some data now with bigger number of supernova at higher redshifts, that at redshifts bigger than 0.7, the effect disappears, so it is not monotonic. If it would be dust, we would expect dimming of supernova, more and more dimming, and bigger distances. And if this effect is non-monotonic, then natural explanation that is indeed acceleration of the universe. Because at big redshift, acceleration should disappear, because energy density of normal matter behaves like cosmological factor Q, inverse cosmological factor Q, but vacuum-like energy is something which may be a constant. So action, gravitational action of these two things becomes equal to redshift of 0.7, and that's what is more or less observed in the wave. So it is not effect of absorption. Another thing that it is more theoretical, think that theory of large head structure formation and very well agrees with observation and together with data on the CMBR if vacuum or vacuum-like energy is of order of 0.7. So I think this old piece of data indicate very strongly, if not proof, at least indicate that the universe is filled with normal matter, giving approximately 30% into total energy density, 25% of unknown dark matter, and 5% of variance, and about 70% into something unknown called dark energy. And corresponding vacuum energy is again of order of 10 to the power 4 here, 10 to the power minus 47 GeV per 4 power. And, okay. Now another thing that we know that in the course of universe evolution, vacuum energy most probably was not zero. And if for people who believe that inflation was an experimental fact, we know that during inflation, exponentially fast accelerated expansion was induced by something which is similar to vacuum energy. Another thing. And that when the universe was hot and then it cooled down in the course of expansion, then took place several phase transitions, and during each phase transition, vacuum energy abruptly changed by a very big value. For example, if grand unification existed in the course of universe expansion, then in the course of universe history, then change of vacuum energy during phase transition from unbroken to broken phase in this theory was at the level 10 to the power 60 GeV electron volts to the 4 power. Something similar took place at the electrolytic phase transition, though much smaller, but still a huge number in comparison with what we see in observation. And for me, maybe most important thing, and I believe that this experimental fact, that in QCD phase transition, vacuum energies to change by minor 10 to the power minus 2 GeV electron volts to 4 power, but still it is 45 orders of magnitude bigger than observed quantity. And magnitude of vacuum energy is practically experimental fact. We know that there are contributions to vacuum energy. Vacuum in this room is not empty, it's filled with neon and carbon condensate, and energy density of this object is however well expressed through masses of elementary particles. So if one believes that fusion is real science, which informed by experiment, in that case one must believe that vacuum energy is indeed non-zero. So in my mind it is a very strong indication in favor of non-zero vacuum energy. Well, non-zero contribution into vacuum energy is by 45 orders of magnitude bigger than existing. And another thing that after inflation and practically during all the universe history, vacuum energy was subdominant, and by some reason it started to be dominant at redshift of order of 0.3. Well, when I say here 0.3, it means that vacuum energy becomes bigger than energy density of some of other matter. But its gravitational action becomes bigger than energy density of usual matter at redshift of 0.7. Because what gravitates is this here in the next slide is twice vacuum energy, no? Okay, so some very simple features I told you. Yes, please.
I mean, is your comparison with the QCD Lauphoff energy density really clear? Because, yeah, that's an average vacuum energy density. Yes. I mean, in principle, it would depend on space time, but it would be no cost.
No.
No, it's just an assumption technique that we assume we have to take an average.
Yes, that's true. But everywhere in the vacuum, vacuum energy must be non-zero, and only inside proton condensate must disappear, and only there. And minor fraction of space is non-zero. I'll show you the next slide. Maybe if I understand.
Well, I think vacuum energy density in QCD could be something which is sensitive to local to space-type parts, right? Which, I mean, that we take condensates is only because we don't know how to calculate it in a different way.
No, I don't think so. Maybe not. Okay, so what we have, if we have a homogeneous and isotropic space-time energy momentum tensor in this is diagonal, it contains some energy density and three times negative pressure density. And for vacuum, because of assumption of Lorentz invariance, energy momentum tensor must be proportional to Fronecker tensor, which is simply 1, 1, 1, 1 in this case. And in that case, we see that vacuum energy is equal to negative for pressure density. And knowing that, and if we use, let's say, Friedman covariant energy conservation condition and Friedman equation, then rho dot behaves like time variation of energy density in the course of universe expansion is proportional to Hubble parameter and p plus rho, and p plus rho is zero. So it's very in this striking feature that we have expansion of space and with constant energy density. And it's really difficult to believe, for example, that if inflation existed, all the universe, huge universe, was created from something macroscopically tiny piece of space which expanded. Preserve the constancy of energy density, but well, we have to believe maybe, have to believe equations. Another thing that expansion is accelerated because acceleration parameter is energy density plus three times pressure density. It's again equation of general relativity, and since p is equal to minus rho, we would have that acceleration is proportional to twice energy density. So with negative pressure, we have this kind of this. So for normal vacuum, energy density remains constant, as I said, and but there could be some examples where energy density is almost constant. The simple example is a scalar field or some other fields are possible, and the energy momentum tensor of this field is proportional to derivatives on scalar field minus metric tensor multiplied by something which contains kinetic term and potential term. It's Lagrangian of the model. So if field is slowly varying as a function of space and time points, in that case T mu is almost equal, is practically proportional to G mu to metric tensor, so it behaves like vacuum energy. And of course, if potential is not just flat and u prime is not zero, then the field would slowly move down to equilibrium, but there would be exponential kind of almost exponential type of expansion, and this is an essence of driving basic feature of inflation, or so called dark energy. In that case, we have the same acceleration induced by some very, very light scalar or maybe some other. Okay, if you go further, then to describe if it will be open-minded and don't assume that we have vacuum energy in our cosmological constant, we have to describe somehow this method, this quantity, and to describe it, the parameter W was introduced, which is ratio of pressure density to energy density. And for relativistic method, W is 1 over 3. For non-relativistic method, pressure is 0, so it is 0. And for vacuum, it is minus 1. If we take homogeneous Kalman field, you will see that W is given by the ratio of potential minus pi dot divided by the same plus pi dot squared. And one can easily see that in this example, in any normal field theory, W must be between minus 1 or plus 1. And there are some indications in the data that W may be smaller than minus 1. In fact, in theory, this case should be quite pathological, or either having non-positive definite energy density or some other unusual features. And in that case, cosmological evolution would be quite unusual, namely, the universe would end up with so-called big creep, and everything would be torn apart. For example, if we would have only normal vacuum energy, what happens? We would see that faraway galaxies would flow away from us, and we would be never able to see what is Andromeda or something else, but our galaxy would remain intact. We would live in our galaxy, and at least for naked eye, we will not see any difference between cosmology without acceleration or with acceleration. But if W is smaller than minus 1, one would expect that there would be very strong gravitational singularity, which would not only turn apart galaxies, but also everything. Even atoms and elementary particles would be destroyed. You know, it's difficult to believe. But
because there is no sort of theory of back reaction.
At least I agree with you. But it seems that singularity is quite strong. At least in a homogeneous case, it seems to work. But I don't know how it's a
back reaction. You don't have a complete theory. You just stick in
something. But at the moment, at least if I make naive calculations, there will be such. Big, I don't know how everything will be turned apart, but maybe you're. I'm inclined to believe your point of view than this, but when I tried to do something, then I never succeeded to avoid this. So now we have, I discussed briefly contribution into quantum energy. We know that the world is governed by quantum mechanics, and mainly by quantum field theory, and quantum field theory is simply collections of pre-quantum field theory, collections of harmonic oscillators in every space-time point. So if you calculate ground state energy of these oscillators, you know that in quantum mechanics, ground state energy is omega over 2, and then if you sum up this omega over 2 over all possible modes, we find quite a big number, which is infinity to the 4th power, which is very big. And well, you can say that it is ultraviolet cutoff, but anyway, the number is huge, and the cutoff may be whatever, I don't know what kind of theory it is. In some theories, this quantity may be finite, but still there is a huge number here. What was noticed by Zidovich in 68, that there are, in addition to bosons, there are fermionic contributions to vacuum energy, and they are exactly equal to bosonic ones with opposite sign, if masses are equal. So it was noticed before supersymmetry was discovered in 68, but then supersymmetry was discovered, and it was understood that number of bosons must be equal to number of fermions, and masses must be equal. In that case, vacuum energy must be zero, but what is important, in unbroken supersymmetry. But we know that supersymmetry is broken because there are no partners corresponding to observed particles, and if supersymmetry is broken, then I would say in a reasonable way, that is so-called soft way. In that case, vacuum energy must be non-zero. If I had to stop here, it would mean that either there is supersymmetry or the world as we see cannot exist. But fortunately for us, maybe, that there is not locally realized supersymmetry, but combination of supersymmetry with gravitational interactions or of supergravity. And in this theory, vacuum energy, even in broken theory, may be non-zero. It is allowed to be non-zero. It is not proven that in this theory vacuum energy must be zero. By initial estimate, vacuum energy must be huge. It must be order of Planck mass to the fourth power, so it's 10 to the power 76 gigaelectron volt to the fourth power. So supergravity allows vacuum energy to be zero, but natural value is that huge. Of course,
in Suzy theory, just step back. Yes. You just put the Higgs scale to the fourth power, right?
I put, yes.
Right. Is it correct? Is yes. Maybe it's MW squared and Planck. Because you have fourth power divergence, right?
Yes, so yes. But
you trade it for.
No. In supersymmetry, vacuum energy is finite.
Right, but and then quantum corrections, would they be the divergent as quadratic power?
Quadratic power, there is a second question, and then if you impose certain conditional masses, then they may be also finite.
And just to emphasize, I mean, you're putting in lots of very simplest here which are unknown. For example, you're putting in a presumption about the scale of supersymmetry breaking. You don't know that it's a Higgs scale. Since there's no experimental evidence for supersymmetry.
It is, when I put 10 to the power 8, it is so-called minimal supersymmetry, in which you have normal dark matter, is like the supersymmetric power, it's rough estimate, 10 to the power 8. I don't insist on any exact number, for example, here, it could be.
Ready the Planck scale, or it could be nothing.
Yes, it could be bigger.
Yeah.
It may be as small as that, not smaller than that.
But optimistic estimate, yeah?
What?
Optimistic estimate.
Yes, but still it would not be complete, yes, sir.
It's bad enough. Change the age is bad enough.
Okay.
Maybe change the minus 47.
Yes.
So well, I think right. That the throwing away for valid relations is by not allowing them away.
I said again.
Did you just say before that you're throwing away quadratic divergences by normal ordering them?
There may be quadratic divergences in vacuum energy, but there are versions of the model. You put certain relations between symmetry breaking parameters, in which case quadratic divergences may be also absent. Victor knows better, and he may.
I know, but I don't know.
Sorry, yes, but theoretically the quadratic divergence is absent. In a supergravity theory, even if it is broken, the quadratic divergence is absent. So what you recover is the quadratic divergence, which is m Planck square times m 3 r square, which is some interval.
Well, okay. Anyhow, in all the cases, it's all much bigger than that.
Can I just look to basic conceptual recommend? Since supergravity is believed to be contributively not normalizable, why are you able to make any statements about quantum directions?
You see, it is not theoretical prediction, it is simply reasonable estimate which would one expect by order of magnitude parameters. So if you can present a theory in which all these collections need to cancel each other, it would be great. So I don't insist that it is valid for prediction. It's simply that here is something much more solid, namely in quantum thermodynamics. I believe that the magnitude of chiral and gluonic condensate is well established, at least in frameworks of this theory. And in that case, you have contribution to vacuum energy, which is negative, and 10 to the power plus 45 of critical energy density. So, still a big number. And that's why I'm trying to explain why, because we know that quark mass is of order of a few. What is written? It should be MeV. I noticed my brain sign that itself. It's about 5 million electron volts. But proton mass is much bigger than that. And to do that, one needs to introduce a vacuum which has negative energy density, at least with respect to QCD fields. And the The rest of the proton mass is obtained simply by the volume of proton multiplied by energy density of vacuum. Condensate are destroyed inside proton. And the big question is what to make necessary donation, positive donation to vacuum energy to cancel this term which is known and to obtain positive value of vacuum energy which is 10 to the power minus 45 with respect to QCD.
Yeah. It's indeed. I have a question about the sort of QCD result that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Does that come independently of prescription regarding the zero point energy that you
I think that it's independent. Yes. Independent. Yeah. This is non perturbative contribution. It's not the same.
But do I have a choice of either including the zero point energy with cutoff or?
Yeah, precisely. There is state somewhere that we have to explain only one number. And so there are, if you take all the contributions together, you can always. As I said at the very beginning, let me say just one more. So first thing is indeed there's one number, and it's impossible physically to distinguish between vacuum energy and lambda term, and the same is true here. It's impossible to distinguish between different contributions. What I'm speaking about, that there is some contribution about which we know its value.
Okay. Maybe we let Alexander continue and say so these are some
questions. Oh, I see. Okay, so. So this intermediate summary that there are known and huge contributions to vacuum energy and no mechanism why they are compensated by some mechanism or by subtraction constant almost down to zero. Next, why vacuum energy is our critical energy. What is the nature of anti-gravitative matter? It is consistent with W equal to minus 1. The mesh value is something like minus 1. 0.04 plus minus 0.2 or something like that. So it is consistent with the vacuum energy. But to understand what is it, we need to know much better. If it is minus 1, it's quite dull. But if it is not minus 1, then it is, would be much more interesting. And usually what is considered in the literature, only problem 2 and 3. You can see here why we have this coincidence and what is the physical nature of vacuum energy. And they are described either by modification of gravity. So we have somewhat different with gravity at big distances, which induce accelerated expansion. For example, there was even a suggestion to write, in addition to Newton, Einstein term, in Lagrangian, which is just r curvature, to a term which is 1 over r. I think this theory is pathological, but at least it induces cosmological acceleration. I mean, not even pathological, it contradicts the existence of smaller size astronomical bodies. It is very unstable, but maybe one can modify this model in such a way to preserve good features and get rid of bad features. There were several publications on this subject. And to my mind, one can solve all this problem only together if one understands why there is vacuum energy is compensated, what is compensating case, and why it works so well. So we need maybe to solve all three problems. On the other hand, again, it is never sometimes impossible to solve very ambitious problems. If you find some sort of partial problem, it can open way to understand more things. So I never want to say that studying of the problem 2 and 3 together or not are losses. They're maybe really precious and very important, could be very important in understanding of the model. So there are several possible solutions which I don't put all of them. One is simply subtraction constant. Since we have to explain only one number, then we can subtract this number, and we can adjust some partial constant with accuracy 10 to the power 120 or 10 to the power 47, but still similarity. Another possible way is entropic principle. It was recently attracted a lot of attention, and For example, there was a paper by Steven Weinberg, principal numerator, Smiley Lerkin, edited by Linde. And if, for example, vacuum energy would be very much bigger than what we see now, life would not be possible, and that would be the end of this story. On the other hand, I don't like entropic solution simply because I remember some history that before inflationary explanation of all problems of Friedman cosmology was introduced, people relied on entropic principle, but now we have much better dynamical explanation of all phenomena, and there are predictions of some observable effects, like spectral perturbations, or maybe to allow one and some other things. So maybe it would be much better to find way outside of entropic principle. On the other hand, it was argued, in particular by Weinberg, that origin of life and structure formation would be most probable in the theory with omega, vacuum, to be a water of unity. And so maybe it's not as stupid as I just made my bad understanding. Another very interesting possibility, also in framework of the standard physics, namely intramatting stability of massless fields in de Sitter spacetime. It is very well known that if we have de Sitter universe, in that case, massless scalars happens to be unstable. There is very rather strongly rising perturbations in massless fields. And all in scalar fields and also in gravitational fields. You know that gravitons are masses and they behave essentially like scalar field. Theory is not conformally invariant, and because of that, some instability exists. But as far as I know, the effects happen to be too small, too weak to explain by back reaction of this field in compensation of vacuum energy. If there is some source of field, then back reaction is always such a way that is to diminish input of this source to the system. It's very well known principle of Le-Chatelier, which happens to be true generally. Then the model which I like, simply because it's I work for a long time on that, but maybe it's ugly baby, but sometimes parents don't like ugly babies and really good ones, namely dynamical adjustment. And though I like this model, but maybe most probably, if we believe the problem is serious, there could be some drastic modification of existing theories. Some people suggest breaking of general covariance, breaking of metric, using something instead of metric theory, some more modification of gravity, breaking of Lorentz invariance. And even I heard from some very well known physicists, but it was private conversation, that maybe it was worthwhile to reject Lagrangian or Hamiltonian principles. So I won't have the name, but maybe he doesn't keep a secret. It's like quite a strange idea, but who knows. But again, I repeat that we have to explain only one number if W is equal to, oh sorry, that is another type that should be minus 1. If W is equal to minus 1, we have to explain only one number. If W is not equal to minus 1, situation is more interesting, we have to explain a function. But in that case, we have to think more. Otherwise, we can say that there is subtraction constant. Okay, as for I will say a few words about dynamical adjustment. It is, as I see, it's very simple. It's simply it's the same as adjustment of CP violation, solving for CP problem in quantum thermodynamics. Natural expectation, again, from CP violation in QCD is of order of units, it's huge. But if there is a new field, massive, practically massive field, so called axion, some sort of called dual symmetry, chain symmetry, in that case, a minimum of potential of this axion would be automatically made in such a theory that this minimum corresponds exactly to the point where CP violation is zero. Well, we will try to expect something, try to construct something like that for a problem of vacuum energy. Vacuum energy may create, to generate condensate of some new field that could be scalar or vector or tensor or something like that. And energy density of this field would compensate energy of atom energy. It is again like Le Chatelier principle. And in this model, there would be automatic breaking of Lorentz invariance, practically unobservable, but still some, and maybe also some other quite fine features, with time dependent on stable background, with stable frustrations over there. But these kind of models were considered relatively recently with modified gravity, but it may be not an advantage of this adjusting mechanism, maybe just by product. Now, what happens with this mechanism? It gives some generic predictions, and it was indeed predictions because there were several dozens of models with adjustment. None of them was satisfactory because none of these models could give rise to realistic cosmology. But if one forgets about this minor point, then one could say that there are some general things which one would expect. That initially, the Sitter exponential expansion would automatically change the freedom power of low expansion. Vacuum energy would be compensated not completely, but only down to terms of order of critical energy density. And this is to understand we have potential in which this new field lives, and field evolves down to equilibrium, and potential on the way becomes more and more shallow. So the field never reach minimum, but it is always displaced from the minimum by the value which corresponds exactly to parametrically to Planck plus squared divided by pi squared, which is critical energy density. So generic prediction that there must be Friedman expansion with some funny form of energy living in vacuum with unusual equation of state, depending upon the model. Critical energy density of this new object would be a order of critical energy density. That's what we observed. In a sense, it was prediction of these unrealistic models. But unfortunately, I repeat, there is no realistic model found during very, very many years. And there are, I will not tell much about adjustment. The simple model is potentially depends upon phi for scalar field and r, and solutions can be unstable, and this either will be turned into Friedman. But in this model, and this is exist in many models of similar type, adjustment doesn't take place, and the slowing down of expansion comes because rotational coupling become very much time dependent. If the case is 1 over time squared, where time is t is universal. And this particular behavior is probably absolutely smooth. One can consider something maybe even more crazy, a vector, or maybe even tensor field, with very simple action, just kinetic terms, either all of them or only one of them is arbitrary coefficients here, just kinetic term, simply covariant derivative. And equation of motion for non-physical components of this field, time-time, or isotropic space-space component of this field are unstable. And if we consider this equation without imposing certain conditions, that STT vanishes or something like that, then the condensate of this field would evolve, and the evolution, the cosmological evolution would be completely different. That would be starting from the Sitter, we come to Friedman, and also compensation of vacuum energy would be achieved in this particular model. But of course, I think it's a very interesting problem, not related to what I'm talking about, namely, is it possible to formulate theory of higher spin fields without imposing standard conditions? For example, if I consider vector field theory, normal condition is to put time component of the field being zero, so that only space component are physical. But there is an example considered in the end of 60s by Lirieks and Polubarinov, who considered gauge field theory of scalar field described by vector potential. And this was described by T component of vector field being mu. And they found that this theory is not pathological, it could be reasonably formulated. The title of that paper is also rather funny, photon, which is field theory of usual field, and not off, which is photon. If you read it in this direction, you'll see it photon. It is scalar field described also by time component of this gauge theory. So whole space component is taken to be zero by subtle Alexandrian condition, and this is the way how to make scalar field theory in inertial data. So it may be not really valid. But there are in all the events, that's a very important thing is here written in black, which is very set point, namely in all the models, that expansion rate in this field, even if we come to reasonable expansion regime, like reminding normal group cosmology, expansion rate is by no way is related to energy density or usual matter. In this case, we cannot explain nuclear synthesis and structure formation, nothing. It's simply matter living as a small addition to the background, which has nothing to do. Which define determined universe expansion, but the standard matter has nothing to do with the energy expansion. In that case, you have to make another adjustment, right? Energy density of normal matter is so close to critical energy density. So instead of one fine tuning, we have to do something. There was, I will briefly mention now, maybe another 2 minutes, a model which was suggested relatively recently, namely one. Initially Hayam and Brendel, and later on we together with Kawasaki, considered model with kinetic term of place of scalar field divided by r squared. In contrast to modified gravity, where we have 1 over r for the action term, this theory is not unstable. It is stable because in this model we have small, we have big coefficient in front of higher derivative. The highest derivative term in the equation of motion. And it means that a dangerous situation if we have small coefficient in front of highest derivative term in the equation of motion. If we have small coefficient, then if we have large coefficient, when r goes to zero, theory is stable, then it shows rather nice behavior. Evolution of the field tends to the point where u vanishes, and it corresponds to vanishing of vacuum energy. Unfortunately, there are many unpleasant features. In addition to nice features, for example, in some models, Hubble parameter tends to automatically to radiation delineation regime, but not to matter delineation regime, but at least a part of the universe history can be described. But solutions happen to be unstable if you make some small, there are some nice solutions with this kind of behavior, but if you make small perturbations about around this solution, then these perturbations happen to be unstable. So we try to even do about that, there are some pictures of evolution of cosmological factor, scale factor, and Hubble parameter. And we try even to make, to avoid this instability, to introduce non-analytical coupling. So all kinds of possible interactions were tried, but still this theory has the same unpleasant features, but quite interesting and unusual cosmological and so, in fact, if there is very high oscillations, then the expansion law may be quite different because of very strong particle production and could be smoothed down. But still, cosmology will be different. And there is a lot of freedom in playing with this scalar field. One can consider mixing of this scalar with curvature and some other this term and kinetic terms, and also Riemann tensor and Richard tensor were not used. So there is a lot of freedom, a lot of work, but maybe it's rather senseless because if one doesn't have guiding principle, it's maybe rather strange to write all the possibilities to take a lot of time without any solution. What I like a bit about this hypothesis, that there are a couple of naturally nice predictions, but at the moment there is no realistic realization. So this is my conclusion, that I believe that some compensating agent must exist. And to me, most strong argument is that QCD, vacuum energy of QCD, to say nothing about zero fluctuations and phase transitions and everything else. Another thing, expect natural, expect using adjustment mechanism, that it is not compensated completely, but with accuracy of physical engineering. But again, there I don't know any mechanism which do that without leading to realistic assumptions. Then what we need is a realistic model and also measurement of W with much better accuracy at the level of percent of something. And then it would be proof that this minus 1.04, as it is central value now, it would be really great discovery. But I believe it would be very difficult to do because there are still plenty of systematic errors, and interpretation errors, and degenerate parameters in observation of cosmology and astrophysics. And even after Planck would be launched, we probably would not have an ambiguous interpretation of this phenomenon. And of course, the new formula, I think it's practically established that new formula energy lives in vacuum emitters, and it was detected in data analysis, and data analysis, so consistent data analysis, shows indeed that this is not there. Thank you. Yes, sorry.
Okay.
I'm Lazarman, I'm sorry.
Yeah. since you said very provocative things, I'm going to keep a strong intro. let me start with Anthony and then.
So, you say that you want to completely identify the cosmological constant with vacuum energy, and that from the Einstein equation, the cosmological constant has to be constant over space and time. How do you reconcile that with the fact that I can have Casimir experiment here in this region, there's some Casimir energy, and over there there isn't? Is that a dependence on position?
Yes, it is. But you see, you don't have black hole. You have in homogeneous situation, you have some plates. Within the plates, it is some homogeneous, and then the black hole energy is different with respect to what is outside of this plate. And that's the situation. If I don't,
I think that was my question.
Sure, that's clear. But how do you say then that this energy density that clearly varies in space is to be identified with a uniform cosmological constant in the Einstein equation?
Yes, this statement is constant, cosmological constant, is true for homogeneous. Well, if they don't have something
additional. The answer you gave is valid just when you solution the Einstein equation. I mean, you just took the covariant derivative of one side.
Yes, exactly. But you see, if you introduce something, some boundary conditions, then this derivation would not form your own. And here's the thing. Between the plates, vacuum energy is constant. Outside it plane is different.
Well, this is a bit of a provocative question, but I'll ask it anyway.
Okay.
Somewhat more than 20 years ago, Larry Abbott wrote a paper surveying cosmological constant situation at that time, and the discussion really wasn't a whole lot different than what we heard now.
Yeah.
But at the end, he makes this comment that he thinks that all our worries about this now are like analogous to the worries people had about the ether prior to 1905. And I'm wondering what your response is to that. I mean, is it quite possible we're just mentally trapped in a completely incorrect paradigm, which I know obviously you can never say is wrong, but do you think, I mean, he wrote that article in the early 80s, do you think the situation has changed, or do you think his comments still have merit?
Well, first, I agree that situation didn't change much, and I wrote also a review before Larry, before Abbott, which was not very much different. In fact, there was, I think, first two reviews, one by Steven Binder, published in News on Modern Physics.
Mm-hmm. It was, that was after Abbott.
After that. Yes, mine is also after. Mine was a little bit before.
It's the comment at the end about the ether.
Yes. And that's for ether. I don't know, but what I wanted to stress that what I'm using is just standard theory and see what happens in that. Right. And in this theory, it is not a disagreement between theory And the experiment is happened in classical physics and quantum mechanics. The existence of stable hydrogen atoms contradicts classical physics. Because we knew that there are electrons and protons and things like that. There is no contradiction. Just one can make adjustment, and if W is equal to minus one, we can live forever with that. Only this is quite very, very unusual. And as for Peter, I don't know why it follows that that is. It's maybe not this. I don't know. No.
In 1974, Velman published a letter on physical derivatives. Velman.
Ah, yes.
He showed that if you have a variable of a fixed field, the zero-point vacuum energy is grown by 50 orders of magnitude.
Yes.
So the fact that you have blue or condensates in the vacuum, it says the vacuum is very complicated. It can still be possible but that the zero-point vacuum energy is zero. So you do not get the zero-point vacuum energy. So the vacuum is not real in that sense.
Yeah.
Actually, the transmitter energy, as you point out, there you need material boundary conditions, plates, and that alters the whole picture.
Yes.
And you can't compare that with the vacuum out there, because it's the vacuum energy.
Okay, about history. I know this publication by Velton. There was also a comment unpublished a few years before made by Kozyrev in ITER. He never published but mentioned at several seminars that we may have encountered serious problem with theory, like fixed theory, there is change of vacuum energy. Yes, that's only going from one minimum or external potential to another. There was also similar comment by Link. I think it was published in great
similar.
Yes. And as for Casimir, energy. First of all, indeed, vacuum is probably non-empty because people working in particle physics all agree that there are gluon condensate and quark condensate. But I don't. There are some. But I don't quite understand how it is related to Casimir effect because what I consider is infinitely big universe without any boundaries. Even if it's close, I mean, it's not strong enough to change vacuum energy by more than one of an inverse radius of the universe.
The point I'm making is that even though the vacuum is complicated and has gluon condensates, fixed constants, it's still possible that some mechanism in quantum field theory says that the zero point vacuum energy, the regular atomic is zero.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, it may be. But at the moment, I don't know. It's quite close to the statement that there may be subtraction constant, but in your statement something more than that, that there is a dynamical mechanism to choosing this particular subtraction constant.
I
don't know.
I have a point of field theory.
Yes, that's what you showed me.
Well, I have to resist to make the following comment. Well, I should say I enjoyed your talk.
So you want to make messy.
No, it's what you point out is that there is this tremendous discrepancy in this cosmological concept and what you calculate from field theory. But there is also another discrepancy of a similar order of magnitude, which is the so-called hierarchy problem, which is in fact not quite disconnected from this. And you go to talks, and the solution to the hierarchy problem that's being proposed is that there are additional dimensions of space. So it's very plausible to speculate that the solution to this problem as well, which involves gravitation, is in some way or other connected with having additional, that true space is somehow more dimensional than just forward. And it's
less.
Pardon?
Less dimensional.
Oh, okay.
That's the holographic solution of convex. It's the only calculation I know in quantum field theory that gives remotely the right answer.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm just speculating that maybe the solution in this case may be also connected with the fact that one artificially supposes that space-time is four-dimensional, and it appears to be some tremendous contradiction. I'm just curious. I'm sure there must be papers on that.
There are many papers, especially recently, on the subject of multi-dimensional cosmologies. And also there are papers on Polanyi. But it's simpler, I would say, multi-dimensional cosmologies. As I understand, then it can solve the problem only for rather high energies. But we are speaking about energies of order of 10 to the power minus 47, well, 10 to the power minus 12 proton mass. And in that case, it corresponds to rather big extra dimensions. Maybe it doesn't work because of that. But I don't know. At the moment, there are many papers where people claim that they approached the solution or maybe found a reasonable way to solve the problem, but there is no statement that the problem was. As for holographic principle, it may be interesting, but it's a rather complicated story.
And I'm not advocating it, I'm just.
Yes, I cannot comment much about that.
Yeah. This analogy with QCD axiom is sort of far-fetched, right? Because you can have dozens of models of QCD axiom with a very nice UV completion, everything is minimalizable, and so on and so forth. And here, you just throw in terms, right, which you have no whatsoever sort of UV completion, right? And in that sense, you can write anything you like, right?
Yes. Well, that's a good question. Sometimes I ask myself about that. At least one can, I think it is justified by the following reason, that one can try a very simple game, consider classical physics, and see if one can invent reasonable Lagrangian or Hamiltonian remaining in framework of standard, approach, which could solve this problem at least just in classical language.
But you have many more derivatives than two types of derivatives.
Yes.
This is not the standard classical.
Well, I mean, by standard classical, I mean theory which uses standard Lagrangian approach. In fact, the model which I written last with tensor field, it can be
that's what I'm asking.
Yes, only second derivative and nothing else. So in that sense, it's okay. But of course, quantum theory can mean serious problems, but at least at classical level, it would be interesting to find. But at the moment...
I was wondering, and this is really out of ignorance, but I was wondering whether it might be reasonable to expect that the calculation of the vacuum energy from quantum field theory would not be changed a lot if instead of using the flat space-time rules of quantum field theory, you were going to the curved space-time calculation, where you might expect some, well, it's a long-scale modification, but the rules are sufficiently different that you don't have all of the calculation tools and all of the structure in curved space-time that you would have. Do you think there's anything?
Yes. Well, maybe not. I don't know how. Almost difficult to say yes or no. One more. In fact, calculations has been done in the Cedar space time. It's relatively simple. Well, very symmetric space, and quantum corrections has been calculated or estimated, and the problem persists. But there are some more terms and more energy which are proportional to Hubble square or something like that, and the normalization is different except for m squared, lambda squared, you may have h squared or r by lambda squared or some others, and that makes life more interesting, more complicated, but no ways are open which make the problem simple. But all that.
Other questions? Let's have somebody solve its problems. So those of you who are just starting don't have to come back in 30 years and say to a speaker, when I was a graduate student, I heard somebody ready to be saying that. And with that, let's thank Alexander. He's around for another 10 days or so.
I'm going to take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007 and I'll take the seminar that I went to in 2007